Is it rolling, Bob?
Could I have your 80 cent senior's coffee, please, with just one cream?
Senior coffee?
Yep, one cream.
Senior coffee, one cream?
Yeah, and could you open the lid for me, please? Thank you. Thank you. This is not my usual whopper. Yeah, that's good noise. Okay, move it up here. Thank you. Oh, that's... Didn't this happen last time? She's going to come out the door or something? Coffee is brewing. All right, well, we may as well get started here. I'll turn down one of the rockets. I love this. This is the best of 11 rockets. Well, there's a man. No. Yeah, it's Monday. I'm just back from the doctor. You know, it couldn't have been longer than 4 minutes that I was in there with him. I like my doctor. He's a nice guy. I knew this was his style. No, you're going the wrong way, lady. I knew this was his style of just very brief. Yep. And I asked, you know, and I said, you know, my legs are getting, you know, worried me my second leg might become like my first leg. I'm going to need to wear a brace. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And my balance is worse. Yep. Yep. It's just the nerve deteriorating. Any idea when? I mean, you know, I see a guy, I got a friend who's 80, who he has a walker. Am I going to be like that? Probably. And that was it. Like, there was nothing else. You got to see a specialist or what can we do? I said, well, I know it's my fault. I haven't been to see the physiotherapist. You gave me a thing 3 months ago to go and see one. I know, it's, you know, it's harder to do that. It's easy to take the pills, harder to make an effort. You got to call, you got to make an appointment. He said, give me excuses why I haven't done it. But that's his attitude, is just, hey, don't sweat things. And then, at the end, he said, I want to show you my pictures from Japan. You've inspired me to go. So this was his second trip to Tokyo. Now, what am I doing? I'm still waiting here for my coffee. This is so odd. If it sounds different, I've got the mic and the visor. She just said, pull ahead. So I pulled ahead, but maybe I should go around again. Should I go around again, you think? Is there somebody in the line behind me? No. I'll go around again. I mean, this is unusual. Turn the music up. Here she comes. I guess that was the deal. I was supposed to circle around and come back. Sorry. I'm sorry. Is it ready now? Is it? Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Gosh. All right. Well, listen. Maybe I should shut this down. I'm on Midland, and I want to go down Bellamy. Although I could go down Midland and cross over. Yeah, I'm here. Let's just go down. Shit, there's a whole bunch of traffic. All right. We gotta go. I'll turn up the music, turn down the recording, and I'll catch up to you at Buffers Park.
My full name is Jack Winslow Horton. They call me Little Jack Horton. They call me a lot of other things, too. So I'm going to read these things of Tom's, and I'm happy to do so. I drank with Charles Bukowski once. Let me get this out of the way first, okay? I drank with Charles Bukowski down by the old L.A. stockyards. Must have been 1956, 1957, could have been 58. The Ringling Brothers train was in. I was just a goddamn kid, really. An animal wrangler and a circus clown. Teenager. They let me drink beer at this L.A. chippy bar, and all the little people were into amyl nitrate poppers back then. Scary shit. Makes you feel bigger, I guess. Same thing liquor does. So I run into Bukowski and we're drinking this and that. I believe the bar was called the Raven's Wing, down there near the Challenge Creamery. Well, Bukowski likes my stories about circus life and all that. He was a stock clerk, thinking of working in the post office, I believe. Or maybe he just started the post office. He was living with some women and a woman that had a real lush problem. Well, the long and the short of it is, one morning around 3 a.m., I bet Bukowski I could drive a diesel locomotive. And he takes the bet. Next thing I know, we're inside one of those diesel engines out there in the freight yards. And I back her up and out of the yard and can't stop the goddamn thing. I mean, she's rolling and a-tumbling and clacking down the line. And Bukowski and I are shitting our pants and laughing and looking for somewhere to jump off. Out in the yard somewhere. Well, we go picking up speed, and holy Christ, we're ducking low because we think they're going to shoot us right out of the goddamn train. But it's 4 in the morning, and that goddamn train roams all the way to Pacoima. Before I can slow her down and figure out how to stop it, she rams into the back of a set of reefers. And Bukowski and I hop off and run 5 blocks until we find a bar. And we're laughing our ass off and scared sober and expecting to get busted by the cops and run down. Bukowski and me being this little guy in cowboy boots. Hank with his scarred face and that big red bulb nose, oh man. But we got away with it. We find another bar and bar hop our way back to downtown L.A. and keep right on drinking. What a time, I tell you. You hear that Midway music in the background? Yeah. Well, next time I see Bukowski in an L.A. bar, it was about a year later. He pulls this newspaper clip out of his wallet dated a year back. It says in the headlines, train goes to Pacoima by itself. Well, I almost crapped my little pants. He wrote a poem about that and every other goddamn thing. He was a poet laureate of L.A., I guess. Big-hearted guy he was, too. A real goddamn American character. With that lived-in face, would have been a hell of a carny. Well, Bukowski started me to write my own stories and little poems, and he got me a job as a hot walker, of all things, at Santa Anita. Some goddamn junkie groom he knew tipped him off. It wasn't easy. A hot walker's a guy who walks hot horses. You know, they gallop those horses early in the morning, and then the hot walker's got to walk them around in a circle till they cool down. It's the lowest junkie job on the racetrack. You know, the back of that racetrack smelled like liniment and cheap wine and bandages and sweat and dope. You know, all those guys were dope fiends and lushes back then. And all the claiming races was fixed. Horse racing was a dirty business. I lasted as a hot walker about 3 days. You know, I was too little for it. Almost got walked on too many times. Thoroughbreds are mean animals. Hot blood, hopped up. But Bukowski liked to call me the little hot walker. For some goddamn reason, he thought that was funny. My name is Little Jack Horton.
Okay, well, we got a slightly different podcast here. On my way down Midland, I thought, why am I going to Bluffers Park anyway? Like, it's not particularly a nice day. It's kind of out of the way. I should have gone back along Lawrence to Thompson Park. Too late for that. And then another idea comes, oh, I know what you could do. Go to the bookstore instead on Lawrence, right near the Bulk Barn. I mean, on Kingston Road. So, get in that lane and then realize, oh, damn, it's Monday. They're going to be closed. So, end up on Kingston Road. There's a Shoppers Drug Mart. I'm out of chocolate. This is where I get my chocolate. There's one particular. It was caramel salted, you know, dark chocolate. Oh, so good. So I'm here for a chocolate stop. I'm thinking, what the fuck? Do something productive and make you put up with this. So I'm sitting staring instead of the sea of Ontario, Lake of Ontario, Lake of Ontario, Ontario, Lake Ontario. I'm staring at a brick wall and I can see into the cosmetics of Shoppers Drug Mart. I'm here almost every week. I get all my meds here and I do now, once they started shopping, the only thing I refuse to use is the automatic checkout, you know, which, it's nuts, man, come on, that means some kid is losing a job, so fuck you. Anyway, I'll get in there. Oh, and I gave my son the rest of my fisherman's friends, those cough lozenges. So there's another reason to do it. So I will have a productive trip on this day, this week that begins with a visit to the doctor to, you know, my blood pressure was 140 over 65. I don't know if that's good or not, but, I mean, it's not ridiculous. It's not bad. And that's with, you know, blood pressure medicine I've been on for years and years and will be on until my last gasp. That's a hard one. Your last gasp. So, we're not there yet. Thank you very much. I've still got a few gasps left in me. Today was the day I said, okay, now, new week. Your son is going to be here next week, so you better get things done. How about you do some work today? How about booking those school buses? And just go through the checklist and see what you really have to get in place, you know. Too early to start hounding for host families, but there's a lot more little things that I should be doing if I'm going to keep up this tour. And I realize this school year, of course, it's March, and this is the end of the school year in Japan. Their school year doesn't start till April, and that's when I start getting interest, and that's when they advertise the tour. Hey, would you like to go on this tour? And that's when they always start writing back to me. Could you give me another updated schedule and what's going to cost and this and that? Stuff I've already done, but it's this is when things start to pick up. So in other words, I'm giving myself until April to really kick it into gear. Because if I'm doing this every year, you know, I need to. I need the money. We need the money. And it's nice having a company so you can buy yourself a computer and an iPhone and stuff that, you know, on the company. So I've got to learn to do it more efficiently. So I'm not carrying, what I don't like is carrying a mental burden. And that's why I cut back a little on the stuff I'd volunteered for the church. I don't like to carry something that's sort of sitting in my hand thinking, oh, you got to do that. You know, you should do that. You know, when's a deadline for that? That just weighs on me. And I really like that feeling I used to have when I was young. Oh, my God. It's the one thing I did tell the doctor. Mentally, spiritually, emotionally, this is as good as it gets. Honestly, where I am. It may not sound that way to you. It may sound like I bicker and I, you know, yell at bell representatives that come to the front door and so on. But overall, it's just a wonderful time in my life when I don't have a whole lot of responsibility, and I'm grateful for so much. I mean, just that house, and yeah, I could go into, oh yeah, well, and what about all the books? Yeah, like the other day, I thought about it. Some of the books I have on we have a secondary, a hallway with just full of books, and those are ones I've had from my university years. So we're talking like 19. What? When did I start university? 67, 68. Like my old psychology books. You don't want to throw a book in the garbage. You can't do that. But nobody wants a 1965 book on psychology. I think, you know, there's been a few updates since then. So, I don't know. I mean, that would be the starting point. Okay, let's get rid of these and just bit by bit. So the ideal is take on, and people tell you, psychotherapists and everybody else will tell you, well, don't feel you have to do everything. Just one small thing, just one little step. And even that is a battle for me. Like, oh, what do you mean? Well, which one? Which small thing? Well, that's not even a, you know, put a dent in the job that's got to be done. The other thing, and this is me telling you how happy I am, I know it doesn't sound like it, is the writing. I know I'm aware more and more of my memory fading, you know, just, okay, I know the core of the story, but those details of, you know, the night I slept out in Big Sur. You know, Big Sur is, hey, if you're a Kerouac fan, Henry Miller fan, you got to go to Big Sur. So I went down to San Francisco with my friend John, now deceased, in his red Ford Mustang convertible. I sunburned my nose, my face, my forehead. But we had, you know, it was a good trip down there. I stayed at the YMCA. I got, you know, something on my feet from the shower. And I did the low life. He did the high life. He stayed in that big triangle hotel. I've told this story before, but here we go again. And I just went the opposite end. Hey, I'm staying in here. And it was, I hitchhiked down to Big Sur. I don't know how I did this. Or he dropped, he was going to visit a relative. Maybe he dropped me off and I had to hitchhike back. I know I hitchhiked back because I remember the ride along the highway with a guy singing top of his voice, "Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me," Elton John song, opening his door and tossing out his beer cans onto the highway. Like, whoa, that was the ride I had. But the night in Big Sur, there was no cabin. You know, Ferlinghetti didn't invite me to his cabin. And, God, what year would that have been? See, I couldn't even give you a year. Moved to Vancouver in 72. It had to have been in the 70s sometime. In the 70s, when everything happened to me, I guess. And so all I had was a sleeping bag and my backpack. And I used the backpack for a pillow, put the sleeping bag out, just lay down in a field under the stars. Oh, this is going to be fun. And then felt these little, ooh, what's that? Yeah, that's weird. And then found I had just put my sleeping bag over a series of holes for field mice. They burrow little holes in it. And when they found, hey, here's a sleeping bag, we can get into that, they went in with me. They were up and down my leg. And, oh, shit, hey, wow, come on, I can't have that. And then I realized I'm not going to sleep if it's me battling field mice, you know, sharing the sleeping bag with me. And in the distance, I saw a fire. I thought, I'll just go over there, drag my sleeping bag and my backpack, walked over the fire, asked, do you mind if I sit with you guys? And when I think back now, I think, holy fuck, I could so easily have just been murdered and butchered and toasted, roasted over the fire or whatever. Because I had no idea. These were other characters. A nun, I remember distinctly one guy seemed to be the leader, having no understanding about Canada at all. You know, I did ask if we spoke Russian, and I don't think this guy was pulling my leg. I'm pretty sure this guy was just, okay. So anyway, I spent the rest of the night sitting around this fire. And that was my adventure in Big Sur. So not much of a story, but and in fact, I remember it as much as I ever did remember about that story. So I don't know what part I'm forgetting other than the year, exact year. But I do remember it was the trip down with John. That's the time I went into the bar opposite, well, Specs, of course, and then the other one right opposite City Lights, Vesuvio's, I guess, and ordered every drink they had with tequila. And the bartender bought me a couple, which blew me away. Well, you can't do that in Canada. The bartender can buy you a drink. It's his round. And just had a pretty damn good time. So that was one. I guess I've probably made a couple of trips to San Francisco. I'm long overdue for the next one to revisit City Lights and the whole works. So anyway, all of that was to say that I keep today I dug through some starts of my book that you know and I know I'm never going to write. And they were just crap. I mean, completely different starts, and there was nothing there that I would have, would didn't even count as, oh, well, here's a good start. Let's just keep going with this. And they're all completely different in terms of style of writing and message, and I've never found the place. And I'm thinking I have to, as you've heard, you know, ad nauseum, let go completely. Or the other thing, just do it. And make another attempt at it, another stab at it. But again, preferable for me, look back, as I was telling my doctor, and said, you know, here I am. I can look back at my life and all the things that people want to do when they finally retire, I've done. And I look back with tremendous satisfaction at the life I've lived, the adventures I've had, the courage I've had to go out there. And I'm telling myself that because I need to, so sorry if it sounds like I'm being a braggart. There's no regrets on that. That, you know, the Prince George story, the Yukon summer, hiking the Chilkoot, off to Japan on a one-way ticket, joining Nigeria, living in a bush village, getting drunk all the time, chasing girls. All those things, I wouldn't want to restart any one of them. But damn, am I grateful for each and every one of those experiences. So maybe that's a good note to end on. I'm almost done my coffee. Well, not quite. But here's the other thing. Another thought I had today. How about, if listeners had a question for me, wouldn't that be nice if somebody said, well, tell me about this, or what about this, or did you ever do this, or what do you think about that? And somebody actually sent in, post on the comments for Dixon Jane's Blogspot, better yet, send in a short audio question, and I'll post it and see what I could do. But that kind of an interaction, something to, you know, throw me off maybe. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. By the way, Bob LeDrew, I guess I mentioned this last time, pass on that little continuing thing, is beauty the opposite of perfection? Yeah, I know I talked about that last time. And it's kind of neat. And Jason Reese has received it, and he'll be doing the next one, and this will carry on. Jason will have to nominate someone. And it is is beauty the opposite of perfection? It is a question that's, you know, worth of any question, you know, like, better than is there a God? Thank you very much. And a lot of people would object to the fact that I did add God. Anyway, okay, we're just about done here. Coffee's not tasting that good. It's too much cream, that's why. I asked for just one cream. But it's always, I'm looking at it now, it's coffee colored, but it's just too much cream. So, boys and girls, thank you very much. I guess I can stop even though I haven't finished my coffee, because I don't want to spoil this anymore. Prince George, that story needs to be told. I have told it, I have written, I have started from there. I have visions of there. That summer, that was just something that was, what, formulating? The image that comes to mind is wanting a nice cowboy shirt. I grew up with cowboys and Indians, right? And when you go into interior British Columbia, which is where Prince George is, you go into the stores, you know, your general stores, and you're seeing nice shirts up there with the snap buttons, little silver snap buttons, and maybe a nice little floral design on the pockets or the shoulders. And I dream of those things. Like, yeah, that's what I want to wear. And that summer in Prince George, like, staying in a men's hostel, being thrown out of the day and allowed back in for lunch, thrown out for the afternoon, you're supposed to be out looking for a job, come back for supper, and then, okay, lights out at 10 o'clock, nobody goes out, the doors are locked, and people, of course, climb out the window and go to the bar. And I spent a week there before getting hired on to the BC Rail, joining the Gang 301 and heading off on a track gang, working our way up to Fort St. John. And bam, what a fucking adventure that was. These are the days when you could do those kind of things. And when I think of so many people I know living in the cities, and the option seems so much more limited now. And again, it's, you know, I don't like to say this. I don't want anybody to feel shitty about it. But these are the days, you know, of, you know, I got a new CD. I mean, one more thing here. Through this, the wonderful interconnectedness of the internet and the ripples and the, you know, you just touch this and something pops up over here. And on the Jack Kerouac site, there is, hey, John, or Tom Russell is coming out with a new CD and is going to have Kerouac's, not Railway Blues, but, you know, a famous novel by Kerouac. Story, poem, coming out on Friday. I'm going to buy that. Meanwhile, I start reading reviews by some guy out of Ottawa, and he's talking about this other album called Hot Walker. And that sounds interesting. And that is what you've been hearing and will be hearing more of on this particular episode of Dicks and Janes. Welcome to it, number 720-fucking-8. 720-fucking-8. You're going to be hearing some cuts from Tom Russell's album, Hot Walker. And unless I play that, you won't know what that is unless I play that particular track. But it is so interesting. And it talks about exactly what I've just been talking about, which is why we've come full circle. About the old days, the 50s and early 60s. About a lot to do with Charles Bukowski and the life of hobos and circus workers. And it's just so rich. And it's a piece of life that's just disappearing. And that's why he felt the need to capture it. And I think I have a similar feeling. Like, I have this need to share. Okay, all right. I'm going to give you one more piece. This is just going to be a big fucking hodgepodge, and that's okay, because that's what we do on the Dicks and Janes podcast. I'm going to read one passage. I've picked up again the Leary book, and it's about LSD, of course. Now, where was it? John Higgs. Jeez, did I lose the page? No. This is about a man who Leary met when he was in Algeria. And it seems like this book is so familiar because I had heard it. But this chapter, I don't recall at all. So here's this guy called Barrett, who's just out of 4 years in jail, and wrote a book called Whispers while he was in jail and wanted to meet Leary. And I'm just at that part now, and it's very exciting. He got a vial of LSD from Michael Hollingshead, who was a man who turned on Roman Polanski, Paul McCartney, Eric Clapton. True story. There's a guy to look up if you want to know the history of LSD, but never mind. Of course, you don't, do you? These early advocates were not dealing LSD in order to make money. They were doing it because they thought that it was their sacred duty. You got that? These weren't drug dealers trying to kill people. They were doing it because they thought it was their sacred duty. They were doing it to make the world a better place, to save souls. They called themselves cosmic couriers. They believed that when they delivered a shipment of LSD to a new town or country, they were actually dropping off a psychic time bomb that detonated after they left, spreading love and understanding, saving the world from itself one mind at a time. They believed that it was significant that the effects of LSD were discovered at the same time as the invention of the atomic bomb. It seemed that at the same time that science had given the world the power to destroy itself, it had also given humankind a tool to develop the empathy and understanding necessary to ensure that it didn't happen. It is no exaggeration to say that these early cosmic couriers believed that they were on a mission from God. Now, how is that? How the fuck is that? Now, one more thing I want to say about that same character. He went off to all the way to India with his wife. They'd do LSD every week. He just couldn't bear to throw away all the hashish and everything and opium and stuff that he bought. Tried to smuggle it back to England. 1965, got busted, spent 4 years in jail, came out the seed that he thought he had planted had flourished. Suddenly he comes out of jail. So imagine that period. You're locked up in jail, 65 to 69. You come out, England, swinging London has changed. People are wearing flowers and crazy clothes and bright colors. The Beatles are putting out this crazy mystical music. This guy said, wow, it worked. So I'm going to leave you with that. I have heroes. I love fucking life. God damn it. If you're not enthused, if you're not excited about things, if you don't get turned on, wake yourself the fuck up. Slap your fucking hand. Do something. You got one life. One fucking life to live. Use it. Make the most of it. Jesus Christ. Sorry. I could edit that out, but I'm not going to. Scarborough Dude, signing off. I got to go get some chocolate. Yeah, the little things count, too. Bye for now.
Charles Bukowski died in 1994. Little Jack Horton died June 17th, 2004, 10 years later, in Gibson Town, Florida. Charles Bukowski, the passing of an American poet, an American legend, an American voice, post office worker, crank, outsider, drunk, madman, American, and a poet. Authentic voice in a wasted land. Little Jack Horton, movie actor, stuntman, circus clown, freak poet, and hot walker. An authentic voice flying above the midway of America. Two voices closed down forever. And I realized it was all gone. It was over. The old LA, the literature of the legacies. The metallic sounds of great lost American music blasting out of cheap little speakers, blasting out of car speakers and cantinas on the border. All the old jazz, hardcore country western, the wild American metallic sound. And all those old stories. Bukowski and little Jack Horton stealing a train engine. And those blind Jesus singers in Pershing Square, the Sisters of Mercy. I can still hear them. I can still hear them. I can still hear them.
When we all get to heaven, what a day of rejoicing that will be. Clouds may overspread the sky, but when frowning days are over, not a shadow, not a star. When we all get to heaven, what a day of rejoicing and rejoicing. When we all see Jesus, we'll sing and shout the victory.
Morning.
Hi there. How can I help?
Can I have one senior's coffee, please, with just one cream?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're
welcome.
I like this song. Ooh, love that bass. Exactly.
one in the city. Sunday night, it's back. The fourth season of the best episodic television show on the air, Billions. Now, Billions has Damian Lewis as Bobby and...
Great, thank you very much.
And although Bobby's the bad guy, Chuck's the worst person
all right
in the world. And season three...
Okay, I don't care about season three. We're off. I'm going to stop this, and I'm going to take you to... Thompson Park. So hang in there. We're going to be on in Thompson Park in just as quick as you can say, Jack Spratt ain't no fat. Chick, chick, chick. I'm not in Bluffer's Park. I hope you said Jack Spratt could eat no fat, because what it did was change the course of the day. I drove instead because there's a wonderful turnoff. You go up McCowan and there's a little, that side road that's not like any other road in Scarborough. And it's forested, and this is the road that has St. Andrew's Cemetery and the church. And all I wanted was sunshine. And so I'm parked at the far end of the gravesite, graveyard, cemetery. And there's a lot of sun. Snow is still piled up, but it's melting. And so we're here instead of Thompson Park. But hey, remember, this is where the Thompson family are buried. So we're at the root. This is the below us is what the remains of what was a stream that would have served that whole farmstead. This would have been so far away from downtown Toronto or York, as it might have been back then. Anyway, I'm finishing off my coffee. It's already getting cold. I was able to open this one all by myself without complaining. Don't know how I did it, but I did it. So, yeah. I just listened to the previous clip thinking, oh, I got to apologize. I have to correct something. I have to do this, do that. And I said, no, fuck you. I don't have to do anything. I liked it just the way it was. In fact... I guess this is really serving the next best thing for that book that won't be written. As I recall the events, like, it's just so vivid, that Prince George. And I remember just so well, because I have scraps of paper from those days. So it's not the, what am I going to write now today? But I've got a suitcase full of journals and diaries and bits and scraps. It'd just be wonderful if I was important enough that somebody after me, and it couldn't be one of my sons, it would just, well, my God, what a burden. How horrible would that be? But if somehow they survived and somebody else wanted to go through that and pull something out. Now, I say that, and I'm just, I'm blushing now. My face, I'm so embarrassed to have said that, because what makes you think you have anything worth preserving? And in fact, I don't. It's just, I guess what I'm trying to get to is live your life fully. I do really feel for those of you who are either possessed by depression, by anxiety, by some crippling sickness of the body or the mind, and just surviving on a daily basis is a battle. And you know, what can I say? I've been blessed. If you believed in karma, somebody before me did something good. And I'm collecting the reward now, and maybe I'm using it all up, and whoever, whatever comes after me is going to have to start all over again, and doing a lot of shit to create more good karma. I don't know. So, where did that lead us? Yeah, so no, the idea of leaving all this behind, but the better that it just gets, I don't know, burned, because there really is nothing in there. I've always, you know, I go back to primary school and getting stamped with that letter G. Like that, I mean, that's offensive. That really is, because next to G is F, which means fair, which means, hey, buddy, what's close to fair? Change one letter and it's fail. And the only other thing you could get was U, unsatisfactory. And my God, anybody who got U is whoa. I mean, this was cruel. This was cruel, putting a U on somebody's, because we knew what a U, oh my God, I never had a U in my life. I don't think I ever had a fail in my life in my elementary school. But I started off in Valleyfield at a very small school, and I probably would have been near the top of the class until maybe things got a little more difficult. Okay, let me see you make a figure eight. I can't do it. And, of course, things caught up to me, all right? And by the time I was miserable by the time I got to grade four. I was absolutely, we were living in a suburb. I didn't know the system I worked. I didn't know the games kids played. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends. I cried every day. I was miserable. Next year, we moved to Lachine. I start off in one school. I end up in another and finally get to Meadowbrook and was considered not one of the boys already by then, already considered a little bit weird, and I guess by then I already had been, and I had that lifelong weird condition of not being able to eat properly, like living on hot dogs and peanut butter sandwiches and tomato soup. You know, maybe I could venture out to a grilled cheese, but nothing with meat, nothing at all, a roast or chicken, or it was this gag reflex that I have when I go to the dentist. So there's been some psychological harm somewhere. Something happened in my life. Something happened. I have no idea what it was. You'd have to dig. I mean, I think it would be deep hypnosis. I might come out with it, and maybe that's, you know, maybe that's an adventure I should be seeking. You know, I'm gonna jump in here with something. This is a complete change, but that's the way my mind works. We have our men's group. There's a lady at the church who started a spirituality group. And it happens to conflict with the night of our men's group, where we always meet. And, you know, it's kind of strikes me as a little bit new age. And I call bullshit. I just absolutely call bullshit. Like, I have no interest at all. But the head of our men's group said, hey, and I guess, yeah, I'm allowed to talk about this, said, why don't we, instead of having a regular group, join her? She's going to be having other people coming in. There'll be other women, there'll be other people. And maybe find out what her trip is all about and, you know, might lead to spiritual enlightenment. And, of course, she believes in God, even though she's at a church that is an atheist church, I guess. Although we know we can't call ourselves an atheist church. But there, let's say there's a lot of atheists at this church, including the minister. Anyway, the guy said, you know, if you've got an open mind, maybe this might be interesting. And I think it's a great idea. And immediately I posted back, thanks very much. I don't have an open mind, so I'm not going to spoil it for anybody. I'm not going. Boom. I'm not playing. Like, I could not stand. I would call bullshit. I could not stand to be in that room and not be able to be myself. Because at the men's group, I swear, I curse, I talk about LSD. I just, you know, I'm me. And I just don't like being constrained. And I would have to be polite. And I hate fucking politeness. And I hate niceness. I hate fucking niceness. I have all my life. Anyway, back to whatever it is that scarred me as a child. Who knows? I have this vaguest infant. Infant. There's a slip. Image of being in a cradle and being frightened by I don't know if she was a nanny or just a housekeeper in that big house in Valleyfield. And that big house in itself with the trap door into the ceiling and these turrets, you know, I mean, that was a scary, scary house. So whether there was something that happened there, I don't know. But anyway, we're going to park that because I have no information on it. That's all. I'm just saying I was weird. And by the time, let me catch up to grade five. By the time I got to grade five and I didn't have glasses, I needed them and couldn't see the board, whatever, my average was G. And G was just, like, good. E was the smart kids. And I know I keep talking about this, but it's branded me. It's so powerful. That, who's this kid, you know? He could work harder and maybe get a VG. Like, clearly, you'll never be an E. E is just for those kids over there, the real smart ones who are going to McGill University. That's already, you know, his father is already a doctor or a professor. Those are the smart kids. You're not going to be that. But if you worked, if you did some homework, if you weren't so fucking lazy, kid, you might get a VG if you worked for it. And I just didn't. I hated homework. To me, homework was just unfair against the rules. Hey, I'm in school all fucking day. Why do I have to do stuff at home, too? And I hated Sunday nights. Oh, my God, the pain of Sunday night, knowing you're going to school. And I wasn't afraid. I had friends, you know, and I wasn't... I mean, there was plenty to be afraid of. Pink bellies. I've talked about that. Pink belly was a thing where the guys would go in a gang and yell pink belly and chase some poor kid, get him down in the snow on the ground, lift up his shirt to his bare stomachs exposed, and then everybody's hands would tap, 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 tap on the belly until it turned pink. And you were scared. You didn't want to be the kid. I'm pretty sure I never joined in. I'm pretty sure I never gave anybody a pink belly. But I know damn well I was always, always relieved that it wasn't me, you know, being chased around. Oh, and then when that new kid came in and taught us how to feint, how to get somebody behind you, take as many deep breaths as you can, and this guy gives you a lock, you know, locks his arms around your stomach so you can't breathe, and you actually faint and fall down. Holy fuck. I mean, the word went out pretty fast. That got to the principal. Hey, kids, this is not a game anybody's going to play anymore. This is pre-drugs, right? This is the 1950s. Oh, man. And I know I had that happen to me because it was a neat experience. And then the other one when you could, everybody pressed on somebody's body. They'd be lying down. Everybody pressed with two fingertips really hard. And somehow you were able to pick them up and it seemed like they were as light as a feather. Maybe because you've been pressing down so much. Weird things. Weird things. And this is a normal suburban school machine. Nothing special about that. But I got branded G. And it was like, give up. And it was, you know, you get to grade 7. Okay, you're going to go into high school now. And there's two streams here. There's science or Latin. And you were streamed. Okay, look at your marks here. Yeah, I think science would be good for you. And that sounded, ooh, I'm in science. You know, well, Latin was the smart kids, the E's, the ones, the brains, 11A. And they were streamed, 11A. I started off in fucking 8I. I mean, there were a lot of dummies in that class. 8I. It went right through the alphabet. Worked my way up to F, and I was in 9F, 10F, 11F, and 11F for a second time. By choice, thank you. I barely passed, but I did pass. But I didn't do homework. It was an injustice, and I refused, and I didn't try. And I just want to end this story saying, hey, I'm not a complete dummy, if you're thinking, we're not stopping here. I got to university, and bam. Hey, I can get an A on a paper quite easily. I'm not stupid. If this is interesting, I can do it. And since then, I've had 3 other certificates where I've earned nothing but A's and A pluses. I mean, I have a brain that works. It's just a little twisted and warped, but... That's me. God, do I have to do all that? Justify all that? I think I better stop there because I've done a lot. And I want to give you more from this Hot Walker CD. Although I feel bad. I think maybe I better change it up. I don't think it's quite cricket to buy a CD and then play more than 2 songs from it. So I might have to switch it up and put something else on. Anyway, this is yours truly, the Scarborough Dude. I know this is too soon to be releasing a podcast. Sorry, am I shouting again? I know it's too soon to be releasing an episode, but my son's coming next week. Today, he's flying off to London with The Rock, by the way. Deb and Brent, that I was supposed to meet in Montreal but couldn't because of my cold, are meeting him to give him The Rock. He's got to fly it to England and fly it back. And so I will, by next week, I will have The Rock. That's exciting. So stay tuned. Lots more where this came from, which is right inside this bean of mine, this little head that's just filled with what Barnacle Bill once described as chopped brown paper. Thought I had a head full of chopped brown paper. I don't know where that came from, but yeah. Scarborough Dude, signing off from St. Andrew's Cemetery.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Horseshoe with, I think, one of the nicest people I've ever met in the business, Canadian talent or otherwise. A fellow that, sort of hits your funny bone in a way. In another way, he gets your toe tapping. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Stompin' Tom Connors.
Hello, everybody. Come on along, my lad, sing my song. I'm just a happy rolling cowboy. I'm herding the dark clouds out of the sky, keeping the heavens blue. I'm good at dying, just wasting my time. I'm just a happy rolling cowboy. Let me sing my songs till they call me home to the land beyond the blue. Welcome once again, friends and neighbors, to the Horseshoe Tavern, Queen Street, Toronto City in Canada. On behalf of yours truly, Stompin' Tom, from the potato fields of Prince Edward Island, chuckle, chuckle. On behalf of the boys and the band also from the Maritimes, to my far right on the lead guitar, Mickey Andrews from New Waterford, Cape Breton Island. Thank you. This here long, skinny fella that gets all the girls around here at the Horseshoe is Jerry Hall on the lead guitar from Buchan's Newfoundland. Thank you. To my far left, we have a fella here from Glace Bay, Nova Scotia, Boom Boom, Randy McDonald. Thank you. On behalf of the staff and management of the Horseshoe Tavern, from all of us, all of you, have a pleasant evening. And come on along while I sing my songs. I'm just a happy roving cowboy. Let me ride that long trail down to the end, where the skies are always blue.
Is it rolling, Bob? Yeah. Okay, listen, I've only got 8 minutes left, so... And I have a lot of things to cram in here, so I'm going to fire off a few of them to get them out of the way so I won't forget the end. Mark Levis has kindly resurrected the podcast lounge, and he's doing it with a mind to strengthening, building, you know, connecting, expanding the amateur podcast community. So this is the work he started at PodCamp Toronto. And when he went around talking about some of the younger people and said, hey, you ought to meet the old-timers. And I actually did a very, very good job. I talked about that on my PodCamp Toronto episode. But anyway, check out the podcast lounge. He interviewed people and got them in. And, you know, basically the job is to expand the circle. And that's what we've needed all along. And he's going to continue to do this. And so stay tuned. If you're not already subscribed, check it out. Look up Mark Blevis, B-L-E-V-I-S, and Podcast Lounge. The other thing is I talked quite a bit on maybe a couple of episodes about my friend who made me that wonderful T-shirt. And, you know, you have the whole story if you listen back. But who put out his first podcast. He was recording at PodCamp Toronto. And it's finally out, and I asked for permission to name it and have you go and look at it. So I really want to encourage anybody to go and listen. His first episode is very short. It's about procrastination, which is a very fitting topic. And this is from Yasser. So if you go to the old www.yasserhabib.com, and that would be spelled Y-A-S-A-R-H-A-B-I-B. YASARHABIB.com, and you will find it. Give it a listen. Even nicer if you send back a comment to him. But at least listen. Maybe you can see his numbers go up. I don't know how he's tracking any of this. This is just a first time, and it was a good episode. And my goodness, stay with it for the music at the end. It's something you will not hear on this podcast or any others that I know of, and it's an absolutely stunningly beautiful piece of music. So hear it through. It's only about 15 minutes or so. Okay. I mentioned earlier about when I was in Shoppers, where I too often do grocery shopping. Well, you know, I just look for things on sale. Very often, you know, your normal boxes of cereal are on sale, or bread or chocolate milk or something. But anyway, and I said I refuse to use the, I call them automated checkouts, but you know, the self-serve. You know, put your things in the bag like they do at all these big stores now. And I just don't get it, don't like it. And I've stood in line even when those are empty and there's a lineup. But the difference was when I came up, when it was my turn, there was a young lady And she was just bopping away to some music in the background, and she just looked happy, and it was such a pleasure to talk to her. And she looked at my what I was buying, said, "Oh, that's good coffee, and have you tried this?" And we got on to a conversation about how much we love coffee, and excuse me. It was human interaction. You do not get that by scanning machines. And it is just so goddamn simple. We need more personal human interaction. It made me happy. I know she was happy talking to me. It sort of just made her day pass more nicely. It was wonderful. And that happened. Anyway, it happened. And one more reason not to use those self-checkout things. I mentioned I had a doctor's appointment. It was only 4 minutes long. I went to Service Ontario. I had received in the mail renewals for a license plate sticker for the road truck for Sal, a new driver's license for me, and a new health card for me. And they all came in these papers, already pre-filled, most of them. You just filled in a couple of things here and there, like the mile, the kilometers, and the insurance company, and so on. I went in. You go to a receptionist, she says, "Okay," and I hand you a number. You sit down, and I swear I was out in less than 5 minutes from the time I walked in the door to the time I left with a sticker for my car or for the road track and the process in place to have a new driver's license and a new health card mailed to me. Absolutely fabulous service. And this is just one of the blessings of having a decently paid civil service. This was provincial, of course, but it's what we see throughout Canada, and it's one of the things of living in a first world country, because you know, or I know what it's like, you can imagine what it's like living in a country where you don't get anything unless you pay dash, some graft, some special sum of money for somebody, like those creeps who are fucking paying off people so their kids, their elite kids, can go to good universities and colleges. God damn, that is disgusting, but we're not going to talk about that because I've only got 3 minutes left. I talk a lot, too much, of course, about how happy I am. Isn't my life wonderful? Well, I'm not saying, you know, other things that aren't all rosy. For, you know, my wife's health and her thyroid issues and so on, which I could go on about. But given I can't do a whole lot about it, other than making sure she, you know, goes to her doctor, she's taking responsibility for herself. So it's not like everything is fabulous. There's no such thing in real life, you know. And it's also to say that, hey, this is where I'm at now at the age of 70. My God, when I was in my 20s, I mean, I lacked self-confidence. I went to a shrink. I mean, I don't think I was suicidal, but I certainly had an episode like that. And I went through lots of shit, lots of unhappiness, lots and lots and lots of crap through life, and hard times and sickness and everything else. So it's, if I've painted a picture that I've been blessed all my life, no, all I've discovered is the power of positive thinking and believing, this trick of believing myself to be lucky. And it works wonders. So that's all. I just wanted to correct the record on that. Damn it, that was it for notes. I really, really, really wanted to read out Timothy Leary's 7 Levels of Consciousness, which he later expanded to 24. It just got way too complicated. But the first 4 are just about survival. So the first 4 levels evolved in the human brain, for they allow us to survive as individuals long enough to pass on our DNA to future generations. So those are the first 4 levels, which are sex and basic things. And then he gets to the drug levels, and level 5 he equates with marijuana. Now, you may find this a little peculiar, but it's beautifully done, and I guess I'm going to run over time because I have to read these out to you now that I've told you that. Tim thought that most of the levels could be activated at will by taking the correct drug. For the 5th level, the hedonic circuit, that's what he called, the drug was cannabis. This level is concerned with pleasure for its own sake and is essentially an enjoyable detachment from the concerns of the lower 4 levels. It also begins a separation from the 4-dimensional world of space, which Lear identified with the lower levels, and the emergence of a distance between body and the mind. Now, that is what it's like to get high, especially on hash. It is possible to feel your senses work without being identified with them. This is illustrated in the language that emerged to describe smoking cannabis, such as getting high or spaced out. It is not necessary to use cannabis to activate this level, of course. It can be reached with varying levels of success through listening to music, meditation, physical activities like surfing, or just through a generally luxurious and aesthetic lifestyle. And so that was it. Now, what really gets interesting, and of course we've gone over time, is when he starts describing the sixth level, which is the LSD. By the time you've reached level six, you've crossed the line, and you are experiencing something that is just incomprehensible to those on level five and below. Descriptions of this level seem to point, and of course Huxley talked about this too, right? But Leary was trying to formulate an understanding of the brain. Remember, this guy is not a quack. He's not a freaked out hippie.